There are things that can be done to a taxpayer for government to waste any of the money people pay, or for others to shirk their duty and not to pay their own fair share. Indiana's tax amnesty program, you'll remember, was a success beyond any expectations, raised $244 million, four times what was forecast for it. But we said at that time, this is a one-time offer. Come in and get straight, or else we will come after you. And that is occurring, and I wanted to give a status report on it. The Department of Revenue has gone aggressively after tens of thousands of people who did not take advantage of amnesty. Three collection agencies are at work. Between $2.5 and $3 million has been collected so far, but on top of that, there are 32,000 garnishments and bank account levies, I should say, and 2,000 garnishments of wages, meaning that those who have shirked have been identified. There's a court order, and revenue will be coming to the state from those people. So we take this matter very, very seriously, and those who have been paying their taxes in full and on time should know that thousands of people who weren't and businesses who weren't now have been identified and will be sharing the burden as they always should have. We estimate at least $39 million will come in from the levies and garnishments that have been identified so far, and this process is continuing to move. Separately and related, we discovered that over 100,000 businesses in the state have been collecting taxes from Hoosiers. This would be sales and withholding taxes, and not turning them over or turning them over in full. And the department is aggressively pursuing these folks as well, and we anticipate substantial collections. This, of course, is totally unfair. Hoosiers paid these taxes, and yet they have not been available to provide public services for Hoosiers because nobody was checking, and now we are. So I want to thank the Department of Revenue again for a spectacular success in the initial amnesty program, but we always said that the follow-up and the enforcement for those who didn't take advantage of the amnesty would be equally important, and we will continue to work every day to see that it's as successful as the original amnesty.
So is there a total number for these enforcement efforts?
Tens of thousands of enforcement efforts. We'll have specific numbers for you at the close of the meeting. $5 million collected so far, and another $39 million projected just from the garnishments and bank accounts that have been identified so far, but we are just scratching the surface.
One of the criticisms has been that this long list of delinquent taxpayers, there was no way to remove names off it for people who were dead, gone, whose business slash property no longer existed. Uh-huh. There's nothing there to take from them, mm-hmm. supposedly. Yeah. Yet the government has found there's something there to take from these people?
Well, we've not found a way to take something from someone who's gone on.
Okay.
But, you know, yes, the records were a wreck, and there had been no follow-up or enforcement program that I know of before. And so, yes, there are lots of accounts there that we'll never recover a dime from, but that would not be a reason to leave situation where it was. And so there are tens of thousands of people who are truly delinquent and are findable, and the department is finding them.
Have you, or has the department written off a certain number of accounts or a certain amount of money as uncollectible?
Oh, sure. And the follow-up process will identify those accounts that Rich was talking about and separate those that were either uncollectible or perhaps mistakes in the records. These are huge numbers, so you're going to have plenty of each. But the fact is that there were thousands and thousands of people who were not paying their taxes, were not turning over what are called trust taxes that were collected from Hoosiers and were supposed to be passed on to provide for the good of all. And now, finally, we are securing justice in those situations.
Sure, there were past efforts to find some of these people and collect that money.
I'm sure that's right, but nothing to approach this. I don't know that we ever used private firms to help before, and brought their expertise to bear, and also the sort of just additional firepower, if you will, to go after numbers this large.
How many agencies, again, did you say, private collection agencies?
I think the answer is three.
And how much is that costing the state to hire those firms?
A tiny fraction of what they collect.
John. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, say it again, Eric.
Has collection agreements been done yet on businesses that weren't remitting their sales tax, or is this purely on the income tax side so far?
I'll refer you to John after, but I think the answer is both, sales and withholding. Also, a very aggressive effort on businesses as they come on the tax rolls, as they form or file. And in addition, those businesses that have to renew their licenses, if they show up on the list of tax delinquents, we're going to act to withhold their business license until they come clean and come to terms.
Do you know how many people or entities that promised to pay up to the payment plan that ended in June did not meet that obligation?
Mike, I'll have to refer you to John. There were, yes, a certain percentage that offered to pay up over time and couldn't pay it all at one time. As far as I know, most of those folks are, we know exactly who they are, and as far as I know, most of them are on track, but John may be able to give you a number later.
Why is the proportion what it is? Why is it so little relative?
Well, amnesty was four times more successful than the legislature projected it would be. I think it was so well done. The marketing was so good. The follow-up was so good that a very high percentage of people, more than folks expected, did take advantage, did get straight and right. By the way, please remember that this brought tens of thousands of businesses and individuals onto the tax rolls, meaning that they will presumably be paying this year and next year and in future years, and have that additional benefit. But we don't know how much the follow-on enforcement will finally bring. This is a very preliminary report. The collection process is very aggressive and ongoing, and the process of letting businesses know we are serious about coming after you if you are collecting tax dollars from Hoosiers and not remitting them or turning them over as you should. $39 million is what is as available in the accounts that already have a judicial action or order on them. I don't know that it'll all be collected, but remember, we're just scratching the surface, and this is only the levies and garnishments that have been effected so far, and that number is going to grow very rapidly.
How quickly do you conceive getting this money back?
Well, in these cases, the money is coming in on a steady basis based on the ability to pay. And I'll refer you to revenue for some estimate as to how long. If someone had a very small judgment, it might only take a short time for that to be liquidated. If they had a very large one, that process is one that allows them to pay it off over a longer time and still stay in business.
Why was there a decision made to use private collection agencies? Was the Department of Revenue simply unable or did not have the resources to do that kind of work?
This problem, it was so monumental. The records were a wreck, first of all, but it was massive. And there was simply no way. You know, you couldn't hire enough government employees to do this. And so just as the state contracts for 1,000 other services with businesses, Hoosier businesses, that usually that are expert, we did so here. And there'll be a very, very high rate of return. As I say, their compensation will be a fraction of what they bring in.
Does that have precedence even in your administration or beyond? Do you know of a government hiring a collection agency?
The IRS is beginning to do it now, and it's way overdue. Again, it is the two least fair things I can think of to the Hoosier taxpayer are for government to waste the money they pay or not to collect it effectively from others who are shirking their duty and leaving more burden on the folks who live up to theirs. And so I'm for just about any step that works, that'll be effective in bringing more justice to that situation.
So if we essentially stopped, we used to contract with individual attorneys and counties, and then the sheriffs would go through the warrant process. If we essentially stopped that?
I don't know. I think maybe that's still going on. I would just say that it, I guess it is still going on, but just look at the numbers. Look at the incredible amount of money that was owed but not paid, the incredible number of businesses or individuals who were finding a way to avoid their responsibility. It was high time for new approaches and getting serious about this.
The TNR yesterday changed its policy to allow people with handgun licenses to bring those guns in the pocket. You're meeting with the group from the NRA, one of their meetings tonight in southern Indiana. Do you think there are other things that the state needs to do to, loosen gun laws, but change some other gun laws? Is this the tip of the iceberg? Are there other things that need to be done?
I don't know, but I'm open to them if there are. I believe in the Bill of Rights, all of it. And just as I believe in the First Amendment rights of people who, criticize or attack us on a daily basis, I believe in the Second Amendment rights of to bear arms. By the way, go check the Indiana state constitution. You'll find it even more clear than the federal constitution that this is an inalienable right of our citizens. And so I'm for those policies which protect that right.
Is this just a coincidence that you had this meeting with the,
Yeah, I honestly didn't know about this reg until just a few days ago. So someone, it's either purely coincidental or someone thought it'd be timely. But as far as I understand it, it has been in the works for a while and was ripe for a decision.
Can you explain? It seems like we're loosening the gun restriction at the state parks, and at the same time, we're getting ready to add metal detectors here to more go after guns. Mm-hmm.
One is honoring the right of licensed and law-abiding citizens that exists everywhere else. I don't think they should forfeit it when they come to our state park. There is a completely separate, I think, purpose in protecting public spaces from those who might have criminal intent. And that's a common practice elsewhere. I said I regret, but I see the necessity of protecting our courtrooms, the legislature, and all these other public spaces against people in the age of terror in which we live.
I'm not sure I understand the distinction, Governor, because if you want to honor the right of law-abiding citizens who can take their weapons elsewhere, why is this building or this room under these circumstances different?
Because this building quite possibly could be a terrorist target, which is not the case of our wide open spaces in our public parks.
The press attacked your job record this week, saying with one closing, one plan, he's had in Indianapolis, those states was about 2,200 jobs. Mm-hmm. That offsets, the Honda, Toyota things. Your reaction?
These are the people who were in charge for 16 years. We know what came of that. These are people who drove the truck into the ditch, throwing mud balls at the crew of the tow truck. And, they're free to say what they want, but it'd be a lot more, I think, appropriate for them once, just once, to bring a positive suggestion about the ways we revive the Indiana economy from its decline. And we only know what these folks are against, and to this date we're waiting for the first positive suggestion. So I don't choose to respond in kind. We'll just keep on pressing ahead with what any objective observer knows is a very strong recent streak of positive announcements in this state.
You said they drove the truck into the ditch, but also under their leadership, we reached the highest job rate we've ever had. So how
I'm just referring to where we were at the end of 2004. There was a bubble in this nation that lifted everywhere temporarily. But the long-term decline of the Indiana economy has been amply chronicled by your newspaper and every other one in this room. And it's going to take a long, long time to reverse it. But again, I'll just say that folks who had control for 16 years until very recently ought to be a little more charitable about those who only came here to, as I say, with the tow truck.
What do you think is the appropriate time? When does it stop being there? When are our job numbers no longer a result of their leadership?
I didn't bring this up. They did.
I'm just asking.
Yes.
When do you think that's, yeah. when is that appropriate?
I'm perfectly happy to talk only about what has happened since we arrived, and that is a record number of new jobs announcements, measured by jobs, measured by capital investment, last year, shattered this year. And we're going to try to break it every year. But it will be a long, long march. I've never said anything different as a candidate or in this office. And I'm perfectly happy to talk about what has happened in these brief 18 months. It's a very positive trend. It's not nearly enough, and we're going to do all we can to make it accelerate further. I'm just pointing out that, you know, those who had a long, long time and left the state in less than, I think, acceptable economic shape ought to forbear a little bit from throwing rocks at those who so far have not done too badly.
Speaking of taxes, earlier this week, there was a former Teamsters leader in Anderson who was arrested, who was possessing illegal gambling machines and other violations. Simultaneous with that, the Indiana Licensed Beverage Association has been having meetings around the state where they are promoting their legislation that they hope to get introduced to legalize electronic machines. If a bill like that were to pass by the General Assembly and make its way to your desk, could you support something like that? The association is saying that it could generate $200 million in revenue for the state if the machines were taxed.
Well, I've said before that the answer is maybe, if it was tightly regulated. The current situation, evidenced by the organized crime activity, which was just, which our excise police just broke up, is not a good one. I've always said that if we have laws on the books, they ought to be enforced, and we are. If the legislature wants to modify those laws, I'd sure look at it. I think any such proposal would be tightly regulated, limited, could probably have the effect of reducing the total amount of cherry-master gambling going on in the state, and while bringing it, assuring people that it was being done honestly. So I'm open to that, as I've always said.
But you don't, your administration doesn't have any plans to introduce it?
No, I'm not planning to.
So far, how is your
Answer is yes, unquestionably. Not everywhere, and not nearly to my satisfaction. But then we'll never be satisfied. These things can always be improved. But go look at the performance reports we now issue, and you'll see where the bright spots are and where the inadequacies are. And I'm enormously proud of people like the folks at Revenue, people in most of our departments who have dramatically improved performance. Remember the backlogs of unemployment insurance? They're gone. The wait time to get an income tax return, way down. The wait time for a permit of various kinds, all down. So we've got good spots and not so good. We're working hard on to make the good places better, and the weak spots are getting special emphasis.
Governor, how are things at the BMV these days? We are heading into voting season. People are going to be getting their IDs and such. How are things over there?
Not good enough, but a lot better. And thanks only to the changes that have occurred there, we can actually track these things now, total transaction time and customer satisfaction, all being measured. We know where the bad branches are. We know where the great branches are. The new branches, which I hope some of you have seen, are terrific. And they're having great, great results. So it is one of those focus areas in the red end of our green, yellow, red spectrum. But the people over there are working very hard and are making what has always been, let's remember, always been a troubled agency better, but we got a long way to go.
Fully kindergarten, where do you stand on additional state funding for facilities and transportation? Because it was my understanding that the estimates that were released did not include those areas.
I think we're most likely to provide funding through the formula and let localities decide exactly how to use it. You know, this what I think the numbers just shared with the roundtable indicate is that this is going to be a difficult thing to do, but it's an essential thing to do, as I've said for 3 years. And if we are very careful about spending on lesser priorities than education in general, public education in general, and specifically full-day kindergarten are within our reach at least to start in 2007.
Business interests at that meeting seem to express a concern that we have proof beforehand that this is going to be effective even beyond, say, third, fourth, fifth grade. I'm not aware that that's been demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be able to satisfy their concerns? And if not, are they off the table and we're off the game?
They raise a fair question. I think it goes to the quality of the kindergarten experience that is provided. That's a very good question to raise, but it is time to get started on this. I think the evidence is clear that full-day kindergarten can make a very positive difference, especially for kids at the who otherwise arrive at first grade behind. And so it's legitimate to say that some full-day kindergarten programs have not had lasting effect. But it's long past time to let that prevent us from making this available to every Hoosier kid. And yes, let's make sure that it is a high-quality experience. Let's learn from the programs that do work well.
Where do you go ahead on the issue of mandatory kindergarten first? That was a big topic
yeah.
of conversation
for people. I prefer the voluntary approach. I think parents should have the right to decide. Evidence says, and your common sense says, that the vast, vast majority of Hoosier parents will choose it, but I think it's only right that they have that choice. And remember, only about a quarter of Hoosier kids are experiencing full-day kindergarten today, and what we see in other states is that shoots to way over 90 when it's available.
Governor, earlier this week, Lawrence Township unveiled its new early learning centers that it was able to build without raising taxes. How are other school districts that are not here for this going to be able to facilitate and have the space if the state's not going to help put the bill for the actual physical buildings?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you're asking a veteran Lawrence Township parent. I've given and helped raise money at the foundation there. A lot of our school districts have foundations for just this purpose, and God bless them all. If you looked at the Sue Ellen Reed's survey, you'll see that at least half the districts in the state have ample space today. We've got a lot of districts with declining enrollments, so a space or seats on a school bus is not going to be a problem for many of them. And for the others, this may be a reason, and we're told by many educators, it's a reason to move gradually into full-day kindergarten so they can make these adjustments. Not yet. We're still trying to gather input. We've been doing it for months. We did it at the round table. We're trying to create a program that has that can command broad consensus, bipartisan, and across education. And so we're doing a lot of listening still. But I do expect, as usual, to advance a proposal. At least can be a starting point, and we'll be doing that over the next month or two, I think. I've said so often, I'm always in, if something's a good idea, I'm always in a hurry to get it done. I've done a lot of listening to educators, and as well as those who are with me, determined to keep Indiana in the black after all those years of red ink. And so we have to balance these practical concerns, also the financial concerns. And it may well be that some sort of phase-in makes sense. I am convinced that we can get full-day kindergarten to the kids who need it most, that is, those at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, in 1 year, and I wouldn't settle for less than that.
Governor, do you have any thoughts on the Methodist Hospital tragedy? Do you think the state should have a role in perhaps trying to prevent that in the future?
Obviously, Ted, the answer is yes. On the day I was sworn in, I came to this room and signed 7 or 8 executive orders to begin keeping the commitments we had made to Hoosiers. One of those was to require that in this state, medical errors be reported and to put us in the front rank in that respect. And that is progressing. And this is exactly the reason I had served. I'd spent a lot of time in healthcare. I knew about shocking number of avoidable, preventable errors happening in our hospitals all over America. We have to work on knowing what errors are occurring, not for purposes of punishment, but for purposes of identifying patterns and most frequent errors and reaching standard practices that prevent them. And this was a terribly tragic reminder of how important this is. It's been said correctly that if two planes were crashing every day in America, there'd be a national inquiry in a hurry. But we are losing that amount of people to avoidable hospital errors on a regular basis, and we're just determined that Indiana will lead in trying to reduce that. And I'm so sad that we had this awful reminder of that continuing problem. But again, we put that process in place. The data is being collected in this state now. I hope every state will follow that. And now, then the next important goal is to take that information and do everything possible to make sure every hospital takes the steps that prevent drug misdosing, that prevent infections, that prevent accidents in surgery that are utterly avoidable if you simply do the right things every time.
Have you sat down with the mayor's office any time in the past few weeks or so? Excuse me, talk about the closure of the Colts Stadium, that $10 million and over operating
costs? No, nothing new there. Mayor Barton and I have had a lot of interaction lately as we tried to work out the situation of the money the other cities and towns owed. But we haven't been back to the subject of the convention center yet.
Position change, we're still the same?
We want to be helpful. And if additional revenue sources are needed, we're happy to try to help the city get the flexibility to do that. Nothing new to say beyond that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.